Thanks so much, Steve. It's Bill Left with you. My partner, Wendy Snyder, out for the rest of this week. She's on vacation. She'll be back on Monday. The good news is one of our favorite guests is in studio with me, Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert, and he's written a book or two. Wait a second, John. Hold on a second. There you are.
I'm waiting.
There you are.
Okay. Yes, now, written a book or two. Correct. Yes.
Let's also talk about that podcast for just a little bit, because everyone I know is loving it, and I've heard it, and I think you do a good job. It's you and your wife, and the podcast is called?
It's called Better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Julie's idea, my wife's brainstorm. I had a podcast called Undo Anxiety, which seemed to make people anxious, and she said, can't we do better? And
thus was born.
She was correct.
She was absolutely right. All right. Several things to discuss with you, but before we get to the real topics, I just want your opinion on this.
Yeah.
Last night, the All-Star game took place. I talked about this with Dave Bennett a little bit earlier, but I need your advice on this. Josh Hader is a pitcher, middle reliever for the Milwaukee Brewers. Turns out, we learned during the game, that as a kid, as a teenager, 16 or 17 years old, he put some horrible things on social media where he said bad things about gay people, about black people, about women.
Yeah.
He now says, hey, I was a kid then, I'm an adult now, I don't necessarily believe, I don't believe those things anymore. I've
right.
grown up. What are your thoughts about this?
I tend to believe him. I look at this whole incident as a grand cautionary tale, because some of the things that we say and we do and we believe as kids, or if it's just bravado, but it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that could be a fleeting moment. Mm-hmm. Now, this stuff sticks with you. So here's a guy who's at the pinnacle of his career, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this horrible thing comes out about him, right? You know, and that colors the whole thing. And the kids I work with, I will be using that later today to tell them, you see how this can happen,
right?
You know what I mean? So it's definitely a cautionary tale. To a degree, I feel for him. It's easy to say, to villainize him. What an awful person for ever having said or felt these things. But as kids, I think we try on all sorts of different things, some of them not particularly flattering.
Right.
And now we do this in a very public forum, and sometimes that is not healthy for us.
Will our kids believe us when we say to them, because we're a little bit older and hopefully a little bit wiser, when we say, the internet is forever. What you put on there, you might think will get buried, but if somebody wants to find it, they'll find it. How do we convey that to them in a way that they'll believe us?
The only way to do that, in my experience, the lecture never, ever works, ever. If you just tell them this is going to follow, it's like what we were told when we were kids about the permanent record thing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, I do know what you mean. Yeah.
None of us really, we all knew, like, there's probably not a permanent record.
Yeah.
Now, there's a permanent record.
Yeah, there is.
But in my experience, the only way to convey the message that there's a permanent record is to tell a story or two. And I usually tell horror stories, cautionary tales that I hear in my office that are real, where kids' reputations are ruined. They have to switch schools. And even in the second school, they're bullied for something awful they say or do or post on Snapchat or Instagram that follows them and creates their whole persona, regardless of who they really are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It is.
You know, last week we were talking during the bonus hour about Prince Harry. Now, Prince Harry seems to be a fine, upstanding guy, a great representative of the monarchy of England.
Yes.
But there was a time, I'm sure you remember this, where at a Halloween party he dressed like a Nazi, which is not a good idea.
Right.
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 So that's the kind of thing that you go, what exactly was he thinking? He's got to know at some point that this is going to be disturbing to a lot of people.
Right.
But that's another example of something. Now in his case, he has not only outlived it, most people don't even remember that ever happened.
Right, right, right. I think I've thought of other examples that are similar, but that's a great one. I think about Rob Lowe and his transgressions. The sex tape, right?
Yeah.
And some guys can outlive this. Some people can outlive some of this stuff. But kids now, you know, you can dig up anything. People are willing to root through Twitter going back, you know, till, you know, 10 years, you know, as old as Twitter is, and find something.
Yep.
That is damning, you know? So kids have to be so cautious and careful because they don't know what their future holds. And it's hard when you're 15 to think, I might be, you know, trying to get into grad school, running for office, you know, 15, 20 years from now, and somebody's going to dig this thing up.
Right.
So unless we tell them a story or two that resonates with them,
yes,
they will not understand that what I do now has some permanence.
And it's not just kids, John. Let's be honest. There's adults who could potentially put something on Facebook or on some other form of social media, and a boss could come across it and just go, that's not somebody we want representing our company.
It's true. And I find that parents and aunts and uncles are reluctant to share their humiliating stories with kids. And I think the more we're willing to do that and say, this is what happened to me.
Yeah. You
know? So this is not, this isn't fiction. We're not just trying to scare you for no reason here.
Right.
This is real.
Right. All right, let's get on to the real topics. Enough of my nonsense. You wanted to talk, and I love this, about introversion and extroversion and how it relates to kids. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we make these presumptions. Oftentimes we'll label our kids in a lot of ways, one way or another. He or she's not a math person. He or she's not an athlete. But often I get, like, she's shy. She's an introvert, you know, so this is what she is. And there's a negative connotation typically in parenting to my kid is an introvert versus my kid is an extrovert. So we put this kind of this standard around it, right? We evaluate it instead of this being kind of a neutral kind of like, oh, my child is a little more introverted than extroverted. This is a continuum they fall on. And there's a great book out called Quiet that's a couple years old. You may have heard of it. And it kind of describes that, you know, the introverts, the more introverted of us, come up with ideas. We fuel our batteries when we're alone, and we come up with ideas, and we're thinkers. Those of us who are a little more extroverted, we fuel our batteries when we're with other people,
right?
And we're the ones who are going to pass those ideas along. And the idea that there's some symbiosis there, that we work together, I love that idea, because then there's no evaluation or judgment that, you know, one is worse than the other. But we are real quick as parents to label our kids, and oftentimes if a kid especially gets labeled an introvert, they feel like I'm doing something wrong just because I feel a little bit shy or maybe a little bit socially anxious sometimes.
Why is that? I'm curious why that would be.
Why they feel negative about
it. That a child who is more of an introvert than an extrovert would be labeled as, oh, just quiet and shy, likes to keep to themselves, that's a bad thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's definitely not. But you find that parents get anxious when their kids aren't out and about. You know, so on a Friday or Saturday night, if your 14, 15, 16-year-old is home in his or her room, you know, just, you know, watching Netflix or writing or reading or whatever, parents think, oh, no, something's wrong because they have no friends.
Right.
They're not social. Where a lot of introverted kids I work with, they don't need to be out there a lot. On occasion, great.
Right.
But they can have a Friday or Saturday where they don't have that fear of missing out, and they're perfectly happy in their rooms, just generating ideas and reading about things and kind of regaining some strength.
Right.
Yeah.
So for most kids, if they hear their parents or a guardian refer to them as an introvert or extrovert, it somehow in their head labels themselves, well, that must be the way that I should behave. If my parents are perceiving me that way, I got to stick to form, huh?
Yes, right. You're not going to run along with the dissonance. You're probably going to run along with what you're told. So if you're told early on, oh, you're extroverted, there's also this pressure like, okay, I guess I have to be really outgoing and I have to go and talk to the adults. And there's some anxiety affiliated with that sometimes for the kids who maybe are somewhere closer to the middle of the continuum than all the way toward that extroverted end.
Do you see this very often? I know this happened with my daughters. Now, my daughters are twins, so I know the rules are slightly different for twins, not dramatically, but slightly. But when they were younger, one of them was more introverted and one more extroverted, and then as time went on, they did a complete 180 flip. How and why?
Yeah, I think that happens a lot with twins. I worked with a pair of twins, girls, who for whom that was the same phenomenon happened, but it happens with siblings too. A lot of people go from being introverted to extroverted and back again. I don't know if you've ever had that, but I've had that in my life where there were years where I felt like I want to get out there, I want to talk to people, that's how I fuel myself.
Yeah.
And then I'll have this month or two where I kind of want to regress into myself and just kind of like generate ideas. And I think the balance between the two is a really, really healthy thing. And so to think of them as discrete, that's where I think we run into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right. We'll take a quick break and then discuss this further. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. It's Dr. John Duffy. You know that. All right. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Dr. John Duffy is my guest. Mike Toomey will be by in about 10 or 15 minutes. Stick around for that. Dr. Duffy, of course, a clinical psychologist, the best-selling author of Available Parent, and has a podcast here on WGN Plus called Better that he does with his wife, Julie. Let's talk about the age-old problem, understanding teenagers. Adults want so badly to understand our teenagers. Teenagers want so badly to understand the parents. It's not always the easiest thing in the world. What do you recommend?
No, it is quite a messy thing, in fact. I learned the other day that this is an ongoing issue. It's something I've been working with for 20-some years, but I had a father and son in my office, and the dad, in a moment of understanding, or attempted understanding, said, "Son, I know what it's like. I was 17 once," and his son very wisely said, "You were never this teenager, Dad. You were never 17 like I'm 17. There's this emotional weight. We have the internet and we have Snapchat and Instagram and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
We also have the academic pressures that you really didn't have to the same extent. And I think we can acknowledge that."
Sure.
And a whole host of other like self-esteem related issues that a lot of us don't understand. And so we purport to understand them, but we're missing the boat, and our kids are well aware of it, that we're missing the boat if we say we totally get what they're going through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I encourage parents to do is to make teachers out of their teenagers. Ask them, you know, like, okay, so if I don't understand, tell me.
Yeah.
Help me understand. Like, how does this app work? What's going on in your grade? Are kids vaping, juuling, having sex? Is this something we should be talking about? Is this something you're doing? And kids are way more comfortable, Bill, with this stuff than we are.
Why do you think that is? I agree with you. I just don't know why it is.
I think it's because I think we grew up with a lot of taboo around certain subjects.
Yeah.
They're exposed to so much stimuli of every kind,
yeah,
from a very early age,
yeah,
that I think they're kind of immune to being shocked by much of anything.
Yeah.
And so the idea of sitting down and talking to your parents about sex is not that big a deal to them. For us, it feels like, oh, God, I have no idea what to say. I don't know how to present this.
Right.
The kids are pretty casual about it.
Does it make you wonder what's coming a generation from now? Like, what will the problems be of that generation?
Right.
I mean, we've seen so many changes in the last 25 or 30 years. I can't even imagine what's coming in a generation.
In terms of, like, technology,
yeah,
I have no idea. You know, in terms of the stress the kids go through academically, given that there are more people trying to get into fewer colleges, you know, I think it amps up.
Yeah.
In terms of understanding, you know, this generation will have grown up a little more immune to the hard talks, the taboo talks.
Right.
So I have some hope that a generation from now, parents and children are going to be able to communicate more openly. I fear for young kids because, you know, they're exposed to a lot of stuff when they are developmentally not really ready for it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No doubt about it.
And that's going to happen more and more as time goes on. And there's nothing, I don't think, that we can really honestly do about that.
Right.
So we have to open a line of communication with them early on about the stuff we would much rather they not be exposed to and we would much rather not talk about with them.
You're talking about just simple internet access, whereas, like, when we were kids, it took some doing to find a Playboy magazine and look through it,
yep,
you know, and now you can Google any two words in the language and see things that no 11-year-old is ready to see.
Exactly. And yeah, I've worked with kids who, no fault of their own, they're not even looking. One kid told me recently he was doing research for a paper, went to whitehouse.org.
Yeah.
Which is different than whitehouse.gov. He learned the hard way.
Oh, no.
In a very wretched, horrifying way.
Wow, wow. Yeah. So I love your idea of being honest enough with your child, with your teenager, to say, I don't understand being a teenager. Because the old way was you had to try to figure out a common ground and say, look, I was a kid too once.
Yeah.
But now the better approach is to just flat out say, I'll be honest with you, I don't live in the teenage years you live in. So I don't. Let's work together on this, right?
Right. Yeah? And talk to me about it. And you have to come into it without an agenda to some extent, Bill. Otherwise, your kids are going to be smart enough to know, well, I'm going to tell you this part, but I'm going to keep this part out of it because I want this to myself.
Right.
So you've got to ask your kids, well, tell me the next thing. Tell me what's going on. And a way to take it out of their hands and kind of make it broad is to say, tell me about what's going on in your grade. What are kids up to? What are kids doing? Because I don't know. I need to learn this from you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times, John, I have said to one or both of my daughters, I know what you're going through right now to some extent, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but when and if you do want to talk about it, I'm available. I've tried my best to say exactly that, to say, if you never want to talk about it, I'm here to never talk about it with you. If you want to talk about it every day for the next 10 days, here I am. You know, is that the right move or the wrong move?
Everything about that, Bill, because, you know, teenagers are still teenagers.
Yeah.
Certain things they're not going to want to talk about with their parents.
Right.
But to know that you're open to it, you know, that your daughters know, like, okay, you know, if I need to, I can go to dad.
Yeah.
You know, if it gets weird late at night, I want out of here, I can call dad, no questions asked.
Yeah.
That's the safety that they need, you know, in this chaotic world, to know, like, okay, that's my constant.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, mom and dad are constants in my life, and I can rely on them unequivocally, no questions asked.
Do you also think, now, I am so a fan of equality, not just a fan of it, but a true believer in equality, but I do also think there's something to the fact that male kids might want to say something to their dad that they might not want to say to their mom, and the flip side of that, there's something to that, right?
Definitely. There's just this kind of, for some kids, they would say something along the lines of an ick factor,
yeah,
in talking about maybe something sexual with the opposite sex parent, where
right,
it's much more comfortable with the same sex parent, and that's handy that most of us have two parents, and we can go to that same sex parent. Sometimes it goes the other way around too, oddly enough. So my bias is read your kids well enough to know where their comfort zones are, and don't take it personally if it's not you
right
now, because sometimes it moves, right?
Right?
It moves from mom to dad and back again. Sometimes you're in and sometimes you're on the outs, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you maintain it's getting easier now, that the walls that used to be there with certain topics have just kind of come down to some extent.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. And who do we attribute that to? Who do we say thank you for that?
That's a great question. I think in a weird way, we can say thank you to ourselves.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of comedians. It was one of the Jerry Seinfeld Comedians in Cars things.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, I think we're the first generation that had a childhood, because our parents had hard scrabble lives, and they had to survive, and they were working from a very young age. So I think now we're the first generation that gets a parenthood, where we really get to consider the self-worth and the self-esteem of our kids.
Wow.
You know?
That's brilliant.
Right. I mean, it got me thinking about this, right?
Yeah.
And so if that's true, you know, our kids, we can thank ourselves and our parents, because we have the luxury now of attending to their well-being. And that's why if I give a parenting seminar, people show up.
Where
I did it a generation ago, I'd be talking to an empty room.
Good. That's progress. That's Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist.